Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
He's an American icon who fought in World War II, gave you Martin and Lewis, Martha Ray, George Gobel, Tennessee Ernie Ford, Andy Williams, Fried Green Tomatoes, Spinal Tap, The Princess Bride, The Sure Thing, Stand By Me, The Declaration of Independence, People for the American Way, and a few TV shows.
Maybe you've heard of a couple of these.
All in the Family, Sanford and Son, Maude, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Hot L, Baltimore, One Day at a Time, Mary Harmon, Mary Harmon, The Dumplings, All's Fair, All the Glitters, Fernwood Tonight, America Tonight, Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, The Baxters, Archie Bunker's Place, Silver Spoons, Gloria, Square Pegs, a.k.a. Pablo, Who's the Boss, 227, Sunday Dinner, The Powers That Be, 704 Houser, Channel Umpteen and 3, One Day at a Time on Netflix.
All of the above with Norman Lear. It's all of the above with Norman. What you do, you know that Norman Lear is just another version of you.
The exciting moment before the action begins. Can you feel it?
Oh, God, can I feel it?
Can you feel the excitement?
Huh?
It's building.
I feel it right to my, is it the expression toes?
Yeah, I think so. Did we get the green light, the red light? Is it on?
You've got the green light.
We've got the green light. Well, Paul.
Here we are.
Here we are. It's this is All of the Above with Norman Lear, and I am often surprised that I am that guy, because I read someplace he just passed 95 years of age.
Yeah, I read that too.
And that's not the way I think. It's not the way I feel. It's what I know, though. It's strange.
Yeah.
You know what's strange? It's strange the way other people react. I wouldn't be thinking about it except I bet three or four times a day somebody is asking me, what's your secret?
Oh, God.
And I don't have a secret. I mean, if I had a secret, it would probably be something having to do with attitude.
Mm.
You know, life is full of overs and nexts. Two little words we don't think enough about, which I may have talked about in another podcast. I don't know.
But I like how you said that.
You know, I have no notes.
No.
I don't know what I said last time, and I don't know what I'm going to say the next time.
This is the man on the high wire.
But as I look at Paul Hipp, I want to ask him. You got up this morning.
Mm-hmm.
What was on your mind?
What was on my mind was, it was very self-centered. I have a new record out called Sometimes I'm Rudy, which is on iTunes.
Sometimes I'm
Rudy.
Moody.
Rudy. R-U-D-Y.
Oh, R-U-D-Y.
Which is from, I also have a new film out on Netflix called We're No Animals that I'm in with John Cusack and Al Pacino.
Oh, I love that. That's the one you made in Argentina. I remember you talking about that some time ago.
So I'm putting out the record that goes with, I wrote the music for it as well, besides being in it. So this is the record. That's what I woke up with on
my
mind.
Well, we'll probably have, as a result of this podcast, tens of people.
Tens of people, absolutely.
Who will be looking for your film and listening for your...
Yeah, so I woke up thinking self-serving thoughts.
Yeah.
You know. But I like what you said about the secret. How do you know singing naked in front of the mirror is not the secret to longevity?
Yeah, well, I have thought that. You know, the first time I thought that way about longevity, I can't believe it. But I was 10, 11 years old. I had a full head of black hair, which I found I had to wash in the morning in order to comb it. And the product was called, that I used, the hair product was called Slick'em.
Slick'em.
Yeah, that's, we're talking 84 years ago.
Wow.
Slick'em. And you could, nobody would put out a product with that kind of name now. In any event, I wondered then if, God, standing at a sink at that age, I thought, how do we know that washing your hair every day isn't the secret to a long life?
Yeah.
I don't even know if I knew the word longevity then.
All of the Above with Norman Lear.
In order to feel comfortable that you're getting a fair price, you need pricing context. Information that empowers you to feel confident. With TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. From there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now, you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Once you register, you'll see real pricing on actual inventory. This is competitive pricing offered to you only by a TrueCar certified dealer for an actual vehicle on their lot. It's pricing you'll see before going to a dealership so you can feel confident when you show up. With TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. Or go to podcastone.com/my survey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/my survey. Or click on the survey banner on podcastone.com.
This is All of the Above with Norman Lear.
Do you know what, Paul?
Yes.
We have a guest today.
We do indeed.
And his name is Martin Kaplan.
Yeah.
I don't know if he has heard or for how many years he may not have heard the name Martin, because everybody says Marty.
That's right. I never heard when you said that. It struck me. I've always... Marty.
Yeah, Marty.
Martin Kaplan.
So this is the day when he is called Martin Kaplan. Now, Martin Kaplan, who is about to enter, he's carrying a little bottle of water.
Here he is.
There he is.
Hi, Martin.
Gentlemen.
Hi, Martin.
How are you?
I'm great.
Sit down, Martin, while I describe you to...
Every time you say that, I turn around wondering who you mean.
Is he? Has he been heard? Because he was away from the microphone. He just put on his headset, sitting across the table from me, smiling. He's wearing a blue shirt, sleeveless, and looking good, looking good. He's very tan and lovely.
Paul, any comment on that?
I would go with tan and lovely and muscular.
May I sing it for you now?
I like that.
Tan and lovely.
Long and tan and lovely.
Right, I think the girl from Ipanema is coming.
Came to mind, the girl from Ipanema.
Is that what that was?
Long and tan and lovely,
the girl from...
No, no.
There was a boy version.
No, no. I'm sorry. I was saying long and lovely, like an evening in Spain.
I don't know that one.
Oh, my goodness. Will somebody please call in with that song? But yeah, long and lovely, of course, is not the word. Da 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 da. Paul, you know that song.
It sounds very familiar.
Da, da.
What?
You might have had to view Slick'em to know that.
Normally, I can join you on most lyrics you come up with. Not that one.
We spent. Nobody knows this but the two of us. Marty Kaplan and I were flying to New York. And I don't know how it happened to be that we were flying privately, but we were flying
We were going to an event in honor of you. I think it was Richmond, Virginia, for the First Amendment.
Oh,
could it be?
And they sent a plane something.
Yes.
And we started to sing lyrics. And all the way to Virginia, if that's where it was, we sang one song after another. Uh-huh. And realized that we each remembered lyrics of songs that were so long gone.
And still occupying those neurons, which makes you wonder what kind of space is available in there.
I have thousands of songs in there, but not much else.
Now, you know, Marty, what Paul and I are about to do day after tomorrow, speaking of those songs.
No.
We also love a great Cuban cigar.
Yeah.
I happen to believe if there was no other reason to believe in God, it would be Havana Leaf.
No, come on. It's the perfect yellow peach, first bite of the season.
No.
That too.
Well, that is good too.
Yeah. We get together every 5 weeks or so. And with a group that also love a cigar and love good food and love wine, and they all play instruments. I'm the only one that does play instruments. We'll sit around at a great dinner having some wonderful wine, and then we'll all go out on a terrace and sit around, and they all get their instruments. Somebody plays this, somebody plays that. And till 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Echoing through the canyons.
Echoing through a canyon, we will sing and play songs.
Are there some lyrics involved?
There are nothing but lyrics involved to every tune.
Yeah, lots
and
of...
And he, what brought it up was he remembers them all. All.
Of all those
and
songs.
What they don't remember, Marty, they have on their cell phones.
Oh, see, that makes it not quite as exciting.
Well, I'm with you on that because, you know, somebody said it's the modern-day version of charts. Well, it jams... Traditionally, you don't have charts. That's what makes it a jam, right? So people will go, you know, but you know, it tends to be really fun at this one because we just, you know, you think of a song, somebody looks it up, and plus a lot of the guys, a couple of the guys, they have other lives. They don't just play music. So,
but it's still a jam because the only time they're looking at the cell phone is when they're actually looking for the lyric.
And the chords.
But otherwise, they're jamming.
Now, does a fake book count as legit
in
a
jam?
Those
old jazz fake books and stuff?
Not just jazz, but all the standards are in copyright free fake books.
Yeah, it's. I guess, you know what, it is the modern version of that. Dave Koz actually said that to me. He said, it's just the modern charts or a fake book. That's a better way of saying it. All right, I changed my mind about it. I'm all for it. Any song you want to hear, I have them all right here.
But there's no special feat in knowing the lyric when it's just a few taps away.
Well, that's, And see, I've always had that going for me because I spent the 80s playing in clubs and I've learned thousands of songs. And I can no longer, like, kind of lord that over people.
I think a blindfold would make you much more legit.
That's blindfolded jamming.
The blindfolded jammer.
Well, jamming has nothing to do with observing. It has everything to do with...
Feeling.
Confessing.
Oh.
That's a good word in this context, isn't it?
Confessing.
Yeah. So here is who Marty Kaplan is, what he represents as he comes here as a guest on podcast on... what the hell is the title?
All of the Above with Norman Lear.
All of the Above. He is part of the Above. Marty Kaplan and Jeffrey Cowan connected to USC, professors at USC a good many years ago, came to me to say, we want to start a center in your name that examines the impact of entertainment on the culture, of entertainment on the news, on such and such. And I thought it was a terrific idea, and a center in my name. I always have difficulty telling the Norman Lear Center. But at 95, maybe I can accept that now. It's the Norman Lear Center. Anyway, I thought it was a terrific idea. And Marty Kaplan agreed to run it. This was how many years ago, Martin?
The year 2000 is when we began, which is about 20 minutes ago, I believe.
About 20 minutes ago. 17 years and 20 minutes. And the very first thing they did, I'd love you to talk about that first piece of investigative journalism.
If we're thinking about the same thing.
We're thinking about the research you did on the news.
TV news. We looked at the coverage of a gubernatorial race in California. The local news is the most important source of news for most Americans. Mm-hmm. It's shocking to say, but that's true. Not cable, not newspapers, not the network news, local TV news. You know, the stuff that covers the ugliest dog competition, sports and weather. Mm. And so there was a race for governor of California, and we asked the question, how much did they cover that race? And we looked at all the media markets in the state, and we looked at all the channels on all of the media markets and all of the news broadcasts around the clock. And we found that it was around 0.15% of their program, which is just about long enough to clear your throat. And that's not even to ask how good the coverage was.
Right.
I mean, God forbid you would have to be faced with that problem as to how to judge the quality of coverage. It's just, did you cover it at all? And that's what we found.
And 0.15% of the news, the time spent on the news was devoted to that.
Right, which is to say that for people who actually voted, the likelihood is that the only thing they knew about the race is the paid mailers they got, the ads. And you know how accurate they are.
Yeah.
And then shortly thereafter, seeking to understand how much television entertainment influenced the news and influenced problems and causes and such, in an effort to understand that, out of that effort to understand that came Hollywood Health and Society.
Yeah. What makes us unusual is that we're both a research center and we are meddlers, interveners. We want to make the world a better place, not just by studying it, but actually changing it. So we want to make local news better with incentives and with a little useful public shaming. And we are so aware of the impact of entertainment television, not news, but entertainment on people's lives because of this guy named Norman Lear, whose programs influenced how people think about so many things.
Well, how that got started. It was the first year of a show we did called Good Times. And it was the first of the African-American families on television, full families. And we all read the newspapers and talked about we all meaning writers and the directors, producers, so forth, involved with the show. Paid a lot of attention to what was going on in our families and the neighborhood and the culture generally. We read newspapers. Somebody came in with an article. Hypertension in black males was on the rise. Well, that's an interesting idea. Let's do hypertension in this black family, in black males. And we did an episode as a result of reading that story in the paper. When it went on originally, let's say September, October, nobody knew what was coming. Families were surprised by it, and there were thousands of calls to independent stations and local stations, affiliates around the country, that they were not prepared for. When the show went into reruns, the network was prepared as a result of what had happened earlier, and they took 30 seconds out, or they caused us to take 30 seconds out, and they did an advisory. So African-American families that called in following the rerun had a telephone number they could call. Hmm. You know, they were prepared. And we realized, my God, this is what can happen if you tell a good story and have a want to leave something behind, something that's going to affect and help the average family.
So imagine the impact of doing that and getting it wrong or making it up and having people get the a mistaken impression of hypertension. There are high stakes. And you know what writers' rooms are like. Sometimes people are going for anything but necessarily scientific accuracy, medical accuracy. But what if it were easy for a show to be accurate? What if they didn't have to pay for a consultant, to have someone on staff, but just could make
Or they didn't have to research to find out where they could find one.
Exactly. All they had to do was make a phone call or subsequently send an email or a text.
For scripted shows, this is, correct?
For scripted shows, yes. And so with funding from the Federal Centers for Disease Control, which was shrewd enough to understand that getting their message about public health out would be more effective if they used entertainment, scripted storytelling, and characters you could relate to in emotional situations, that would be more effective than, say, a doctor handing out a pamphlet or a poster on the wall in the break room.
So Kaplan and Company started
Hollywood Health and Society,
which is an organization that provides all that information.
Which is part of the Lear Center, and we've been doing that for 16 years. And by now, we've worked with pretty much every network, and there are a lot more networks now than there were then. And most shows on primetime and many children's shows and many daytime soaps. And
across the globe.
And across the globe. We now have partner offices in Mumbai and Lagos, which are the two, besides Hollywood, the two other biggest entertainment production centers around the world.
And talk about that for a moment. I didn't know that.
Yeah. When people ask what are the biggest entertainment production centers in the world, it's Hollywood, Nollywood, which is what they call Nigeria, and Bollywood. And the funny thing is the number one and number two go back and forth, but usually Hollywood's number three.
What? Behind Nollywood?
Behind Nollywood and Bollywood, because they are they put out so much entertainment, and it's for export, and it's devoured by their fans all over the world. And so after spending a dozen or so years just doing it here, we wanted to help those industries do similar things. And so we got partners in those entertainment production centers, and now they work with their public health infrastructure and their academics and their centers of entertainment.
Well, is it kind of like product placement for public health?
Yes.
In a way?
Yes, except that in this case, it's not something serving private profit.
That's what I mean. A great...
It's for public health.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The other two centers, Bollywood and...
Nollywood.
And Nollywood. It stuns me that second and third after... and close.
Yes.
Because one and two sometimes change.
Yes.
It stuns me that those centers are as important as Hollywood.
Yes.
In a global sense.
Yes.
Now, is there content in the other two centers influenced by the nature of American content? Or are they original and they come from the ground up where they're located?
It's inevitably both, and I wish we could return the favor to them. But you know, Hollywood influences culture all over the world, and the kind of storytelling, the idea of glamour, the nature of action adventure, all that storytelling from here has had a huge impact on them.
On Nollywood and
Bollywood. But they have homegrown their own native forms. If you've ever seen a Bollywood movie, it is different.
Yeah.
And the Nollywood stuff, you know, they crank those out once or twice a week is how quickly they produce them. Mm. And they just get them right out there. They're sold on the street corners, and they're on with the next one. But they have stars and fans. And so they resemble Hollywood. You can see it in their genes, but they are very much their own entertainment.
I'd never heard of Nollywood. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
How close in numbers is Nollywood to Bollywood?
They're competing if you measure them by the output of product they put out. I don't know if you measure them by consumption around the world, but there's probably a relationship between that. And we're doing our best to open a center next in Mexico City because we want the Spanish-speaking world to have these kinds of services too, though we've already for some years been working with Telemundo and Univision, especially in telenovelas, because the characters and storylines in Mexican and Spanish soaps have a huge impact on the people who watch them. But you were telling a story about hypertension. I just wanted to tell you a comparable story of something quite recent that happened. We worked with a show called How to Get Away with Murder. Mm-hmm. And they had a story arc about two guys, a couple, who decided to consummate their relationship. And so they had this conversation about getting tested. And it was an awkward conversation, but they both decided to get tested. And the next day at a clinic, an HIV clinic in New York, we know because someone wrote to us.
This is a true story.
It's a true story. So we know because someone wrote to us. So the morning after that episode in which they decided to get tested aired, someone who runs a clinic, which includes testing as one of its services, focused on gay men, they said that a guy came in and said, "I'd like to get tested." And during the interaction with the person at the clinic, the physician said, "So, you know, what led you to do this? This is terrific." He said, "Well, I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but it's because of a TV show I saw last night." And the doctor said to him, "Do you know you are the fifth person this morning to tell me this? Oh, and we've only been open an hour."
Wow.
That is fascinating.
And the stories about people who see episodes of shows and someone has a symptom that you know, some doctor doesn't believe in some emergency room, and then finally they're believed, and just in the nick of time they caught their illness. It is true that other people watching that show who have those systems, like there was a woman with a rare form of breast cancer that looked like a rash, and so she kept going back to the doctor and they kept giving her creams. That was in the story on television. I think it was Grey's Anatomy, but it also turned out to be true in her life, and it saved her life after she saw the show.
Wow, that's fantastic. What about, can you put in things about global warming kind of stuff under that?
In fact, we have broadened our focus. It used to be public health, strictly speaking, but now it's health, safety, and security. And those issues for us include a major climate change initiative and also nuclear war and the risk of nuclear weapons. Norman, you helped us. You went to a conference to talk about nukes, as I recall.
Where was this? I don't remember.
I think it was in Santa Fe. Is that possible? Or maybe it was local. We did a couple. Uh-huh. And you met with a number of experts on the risks of nuclear war. And
did I need help understanding the
risks? No, but what you needed was to be inspired to mention it in the first episode of the second season of One Day at a Time.
Oh, for Christ. Right. The new One Day
at a
Time.
The new one, yes, exactly. Well,
on Netflix.
On Netflix, and it's a Cuban-American family. And Rita Moreno, Justina Machado, it's a great company.
Great. Rita just won the Imagen Award?
Yes, she just won the Imagen Award, and she is a Kennedy Center awardee.
Which you are going to be.
Which... Oh, my goodness, I had forgotten.
And you had – talk about having an impact. You had a little, a bit of a big impact there, it looks like.
Well, I when they called me, I'm deeply honored, by the way, I mean, to be asked to accept the Kennedy Center Award. When it happened, I said, you know, the evening before, there's usually a reception at the White House with the president. So I have to tell you, before we hang up, if that occurs again, I will not go to the White House. I don't respect this president sufficiently, and I would not wish to go. And the woman who called said that will be fine. That's up to you. And so I accepted on that basis. And now, it's only a few days ago, the president has canceled.
Guess who's not going?
After a first one more awardee.
I think Gloria Estefan.
Right, you started a trend that would have continued possibly with other people. Yeah.
Yes. By the way, Gloria Estefan wrote
the song.
The arrangement and sang the arrangement of One Day at a Time for the new...
for the Netflix version.
Yeah.
See, it's all coming together.
That's the way it is.
Poetry.
That's the way it wants to be worldwide.
Poetry.
All of us coming again.
But it's just amazing to have that effect from Nixon's enemies list, and you're still, you know, very current on President's enemies list.
Yeah. So you know who you haven't, nobody has mentioned in this conversation?
Who?
There are...
Amy Semple McPherson.
And, that's one. And... Sebastian Bach.
Yes.
Bach. And Walter Mondale.
Picasso.
Yes, that's right.
You remember Walter?
Yeah, Walter Mondale.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our Vice President Walter Mondale, who I called one day to ask if he would debate
Ronald Reagan.
And I'd set up a debate, Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale. And Walter Mondale eventually backed out. But... because he didn't, he was advised not to get in the ring with Ronald Reagan.
And Reagan was gung-ho, though.
And Reagan was gung-ho to do this. Now, what made me think of Walter Mondale was Marty Kaplan.
Because I, at that time, was Walter Mondale's chief speechwriter.
Wow.
When he was vice president. And subsequently, when he ran for president, I was his deputy national campaign manager. And Norman, just to show you about karma coming back, perhaps as a payback for his not doing that debate, and I really felt for him, he got the assignment from Jimmy Carter to be the American official to go to Panama and preside over the lowering of the American flag when the canal was given back to the Panamanians. And I, you know, I'd written the remarks and I was there, and it was a fairly scary moment. You know, passing the treaty was a pretty controversial thing. I think it was still the right thing to do. But so not only did he didn't go in the ring with Ronald Reagan, but he did have to actually go to Panama and preside over that
so
moment.
So if the debate that I wish to have had occurred, Ronald Reagan would have been pro the Panama Canal Treaty and Walter Mondale anti.
No. It would have been the other way around.
But Reagan, as I recall, was pro.
No, Reagan said we stole it fair and square.
We stole it fair and square. Did he really say that?
I think so.
That's a quote. Oh, my goodness.
That's some of that folksy wit that he was known for.
And if it wasn't, he would have wished it be so and often made such things be so in the telling. It was Jimmy Carter who wanted the treaty, and so...
Where was William Buckley on the treaty?
I don't know for sure, but I assume on the same side as Ronald Reagan, which is to say opposed.
No.
Or was he a contrarian?
Yes, because Ronald Reagan eventually went on the Buckley... He called me and said Mondale had agreed to the debate. We were all set up to do it. Mondale couldn't give us a date, didn't give us a date. But finally, I called him and I said, we have to have a date, and he backed out. I called him because Ronald Reagan had called me and said, William Buckley would like me to be on firing line to discuss the Panama Canal treaties, and I have an understanding with you, so I'm going to underline that because he was that kind of gentleman and kept his word exactly that way. That's when I called Mondale. Mondale backed out. Then I told Ronald Reagan, and he did debate Buckley on Buckley's firing line.
And he took the pro-treaty side?
You have me doubting that now. So that would mean that Buckley took the pro-treaty side.
Yes, and I can imagine Buckley being a contrarian in that instance. But one of the things about the internet, even though it's in our pocket, is that though we could solve this problem in a heartbeat right now, it's much more fun to pretend that we know and fumfer about what we don't know.
Right, that's old school.
Yeah. Old yes,
school.
Yes, exactly.
There are things
exactly.
we didn't
it's
know.
It's like a proposition bet in a bar. I mean,
Yeah, when you could be experts on things yes. you knew nothing about without somebody
yes.
checking
and,
the facts.
And back to fake books.
And back to fake books, and yeah, and which ultimately leads
yes.
back to these.
Yes, yes exactly.
So did you wake up this morning thinking about some song you were writing also, Paul Hipp?
I did, but I didn't have my guitar with me today.
But
I came here indirectly.
You could sing three...
Just anyone for they say that nothing lasts forever. Don't fall in love with sunny weather because they're calling for rain tonight. He said, I'm sober and reformed. She said, I've been drunk since the day I was born. And every now and then I feel all right. And he said, this may be a graveyard and the rain may come down, but it's the most beautiful graveyard in this whole town. Lights out. Now it's dark. So dark. That's from the new record.
Oh, my goodness.
Where's the part about tan and muscular?
that's on the B side. That was a little heavy, wasn't it? I should have. Next week I'll have. Tomorrow I'll have a lighter one.
No,
I'll have a lighter song.
I'm sure the music leavens it.
It does. Well, it has a kind of a Spanish feel. It has a kind of a south of the border kind of vibe going on. Not Spanish, but south of the border.
And what's the new album called?
Sometimes I'm Rudy, which is from the film that we talked about earlier, which is on Netflix, that I did with John Cusack and Al Pacino, which is called We're No Animals, which is currently on Netflix. So when you're done watching all of season two of One Day at a Time, you can watch that movie.
And
I did all the music for it as well.
And you were the one who was asking about product placement, right?
That was a little bit of product placement, wasn't it? I guess at Paul Hipp is guilty. I'm sorry, at the Norman Lear and...
At Marty Kaplan.
I apologize to you. We're good. We're good. Did you get so you had a friendship with Reagan, Norman?
I did. It started when I asked him to do this debate. And I enjoyed time I had spent with him talking about it. By the way, it was another time in our culture. Here's why I wished to do the debate in the first place. When debates took place, there were no feathers ruffled. Everything was calm and peaceful. And I thought, well, wait a second, if people are really... believe what they're talking about and want to fight for their point of view. Mm. Why isn't anybody breaking out into some kind of sweat? Why are they such gentlemen? That's not the way real arguments go.
So Little Marco is what you gave us.
Little Marco, yes. What we did, Cowan, Jeff and I worked with the UCLA debate team. And we, based on the bullfight.
Oh.
In a bullfight, the toreador does not wait for the animal to get irritated and angry. The picadors are out there. The picadors you know, pick a door. in the animal, the animal gets agitated, then the toreador comes on. So based on that, you know, we devised a format where there were three picadors. Instead of in front of the bull, they were behind the bull. So when the guys were talking, if my fellow was, the other guy was making a mistake or said something that wasn't quite true, and they had computers, they were able to use computers and so forth. They had a certain amount of time to break in, a certain amount of times they could break in, and correct what was happening on the other side of the debate. So it was a team, the two guys in front, the picadors in the back, and then and it was terrific. And that's what we sold one night in New York at the 21 Club upstairs with about 80% of the stations around the country represented, conference that had been going on in New York, and we had these guys to a dinner, told them about the debate, Mondale and Reagan, et cetera, et cetera. And we sold, they all signed on to do it. We had about 80% of the television stations in the country represented. And then, as I said, Mondale backed out and so forth, and Reagan. So Reagan and I became friendly in that context. And, oh, God, I forgot this. There was a moment in time some years later, and Nancy and I became friendly. She invited me, the hospital in John Wayne's name in Texas, the institute that hospital represented, gave Nancy Reagan an honor at the Beverly Hills or the Beverly Wiltern or the Beverly, one of the hotels in Beverly Hills. And Nancy asked me to present to her. It was the only time in my life I was in a ballroom with every man but me in a tuxedo and 10-gallon hat. I never saw a tuxedo and a 10-gallon hat. But they were all up from Texas, and they wore 10-gallon hats. It was great, and I presented to her. I was with her and my long-term partner, who passed recently, Jerry Perincia, at Ronald Reagan's memorial. We went up together.
You also were with her at a moment I cherish. It was during a Republican primary debate at the Reagan Library.
Yeah.
And she asked you to accompany her to that debate, and you went up by helicopter.
Yes, we did.
And I watched on television because Nancy Reagan's helicopter landing at the Reagan Library for the Republican debate, and the door opens, and there's Nancy, and who is with her? Yeah. Everyone wants to know. And it's Norman effing Lear.
Liberal. A Hollywood liberal.
Who then sat next to her. And so every time they did a cutaway to see her reaction to something that happened in the debate, they couldn't make the shot narrow enough to exclude Norman Lear.
Now that's my America. That's the America I think we are at base level and we want to be every day. I love that. I love having done this. I love liberty. Did I mention that earlier? Because I had a conversation about that today. Was it here with the
No, please go.
Headphones?
Tell them.
In 1981, I did a show called I Love Liberty. And the network insisted that it be non-political and or at least not one-sided. And the way I showed that it would not be one-sided was to have, and they did it, Lady Bird Johnson and Gerald Ford were the co-chairs. It was great. It was 20,000 people live at the Sports Arena. And every Barbara Streisand and John Wayne, and we're on the show. Barry Goldwater was on the show on camera with Jane Fonda. We wanted the flag and the Bible for all of us, 100% of us, not for the right, who owned it for the moment. Who owned it today, I think.
Yeah.
Who owns, you know, who is connected with the flag and the Bible? It's
right.
On the right side of everything. I mean, the far right. And I think these things are as much a part of our lives.
But, you know, in a funny way, I wouldn't situate them in the White House. I mean,
not in this White House.
Putin is more welcome than the flag, and the Bible seems hardly the book to cite.
That's where it's very interesting now, because this guy has nothing to do with the
nothing.
Bible, but the Bible people are willing to overlook it
yes.
all and
yes.
overlook the gambling
yes.
palaces
yes.
and dens of iniquity and all of this.
Yes, and poor Gary Hart was hounded out of a primary for being on the monkey business.
It's unbelievable. Which means, you know, do you guys track? Like, for instance, in the election, in the run-up to the election.
You guys meaning the
Lear
the
Center. Yeah. At the Lear Center. Will you track how much time candidates get on news programs? Do you track the quality of that time? The reason I ask is, on November 9th, I felt really sort of had, because I watched some shows religiously. I won't mention any names, Chris Matthews, but I enjoy his show and I like him. But I realized that I would watch the show, and the first 20 minutes would be Donald Trump. Now, I realized it didn't matter what they were saying. And correct me but this is just how I felt about it. I'm getting Donald Trump for 20 minutes. The image is so much stronger than anything they're saying. Then they would go to Hillary Clinton after the commercial, but always throwing in emails, and they say she's not trustworthy. And then on to the next, and back to Donald Trump. To me, the message there was just Donald Trump, even though it was MSNBC. So is that something that you guys were looking at?
That has been studied. And even quite recently, there was a report on what subjects the stories about the candidates were during the election, both on television and in print. And what you described is exactly the way it turned out, that the amount of time that Trump got, for which he didn't have to pay,
right.
they call it free media in the business, dwarfed everything else. It's something like $2 billion worth of free media. And when you ask what was the topic of the Trump stories, it was things like immigration, trade, taxes, and, you know, what amounts to issues.
Mm.
And for Hillary Clinton, what was it about? It was about
emails.
Her email and her server. So your sense of that inequity is entirely accurate. But what we do track and have tracked and did it over a period of something like a dozen years is how local television covers politics. Again, that's the most important source of information, you know,
the 6 o'clock and the 11 o'clock local news.
Yeah. And now 5, 5:30, 12
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
one, those get the audiences, you know, on a good day, Chris Matthews gets 1 million people watching. Whereas around the country, you have scores of millions of people watching local television news.
Yeah.
So what they do when they cover politics, if they cover politics, is tremendously important. And yes, we do study that. And I'll give you a reason to weep. We studied, for example, the Los Angeles media market. We looked at every single station and round the clock, every single news show they aired over a 2-week period. And we added up the amount of time they spent covering anything. And so we did a composite half hour. What's it like to watch a half hour of local television news in Los Angeles? So you subtract weather
sports.
And sports and ads and teasers and bumpers, and now you're less than half of the half hour left.
What is that, like 5 minutes?
Well, no, it's like 14, 13 minutes
right.
left. And of that, the first and biggest slice is crime. So even though crime is down, more than 2 minutes is being spent covering it. And then you go through other issues and other topics, human interest stories, entertainment, and then finally you divide the pie up and you're now down to the tiniest wedge of 29 seconds.
Ugh.
And that's what's used for all of government and all of politics at all levels, city, county, state,
right,
and national, 29 seconds.
And including during the election, during the...
This was not in an election period.
Okay, right.
So this was just a typical piece of coverage.
And did it skew one way or the other, did you find, or did
well,
you look at that?
Well, again, it's enough time to clear your throat. It just doesn't matter.
29 seconds here,
out of half an hour. Here they come, there they go. That's the story.
Yeah.
And here at the parking lot, it's Tammy Trulove.
And how do the national, how does the 6:30, the national news make out on that stuff?
We stick to local news. Other people do study the national news, and
right,
through the years this has been studied, and the amount of time given to politics by the national news has decreased through the years, and
yeah,
the length of sound bites has decreased. But my instinct is that because covering Trump is entertainment,
right,
it's not covering politics, that has expanded again. And that, of course, is his perverse genius. He has taken the entertainmentization of politics to its scary conclusion.
Yeah.
And the reason, and he knows it, and he rubs it in their faces, the reason they gave him coverage was it was good for their ratings.
Mm.
And
yeah,
and in fact, you remember when he threatened to pull out of various debates, he said, fine, let your ratings tank,
yeah,
if you won't let me do what I want. And you know, so he had them.
Well, so that's why the lie of the idea that there is this left-wing media bias is just ridiculous.
No, the religion of TV news is profit.
Profit. It was all. That's what I was feeling,
you know,
on November 9th. That's why I felt had.
When I came into television, the news, there were only three networks, as I said earlier. The news was not a profit center. The news was, David Sarnoff, who ran NBC, Leonard Goldenson, who ran ABC, and General Sarnoff, NBC. They were broadcasters.
Mm.
You don't hear the word that much anymore. And they took, and they had a sense of responsibility. NBC had a symphony orchestra on Saturday afternoons. ABC did afternoon specials for informing kids. I mean, it was another world.
And they worked at a loss, didn't they?
They were loss leaders.
They factored it into the...
So yeah, you know what changed that? 60 Minutes. When CBS discovered that 60 Minutes could make money by selling ads, they said, oh, my God, news can be a profit center.
Wow.
And so going forward, the news divisions of the networks were moved under the entertainment divisions, and they were all tasked with making profit just as any other entertainment product they were putting out.
So is that the late
60s? Information,
70s, in the 70s.
In the 70s.
Would you guess that that information came to you from a Walter Mondale speechwriter?
Or...
Right.
You know,
at the Norman Lear Center.
You left out my Disney life.
No,
but you're
I
forgiven.
Was getting.
Oh,
no, I was just getting to that.
There.
I was getting it before the Norman Lear Center and after the Walter Mondale life. The man went to Disney and produced films with Eddie Murphy.
And
same Martin Kaplan.
Do
right.
tell. Do tell.
I was an executive at Disney, and I was also a screenwriter and producer. And I had the amazing experience of going there exactly at the time that the family company had been taken over in a hostile takeover by a group which ended up including Michael Eisner, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and Frank Wells. And I arrived there a few months after that. They decided that they wanted to break all the rules of what a studio was and who would be hired. And I seemed to be the chosen ringer for that. And it was a wild ride.
And what movies did you work on?
Well, I, as a writer and producer, I wrote and was the executive producer of three movies. One that Norman just mentioned is called The Distinguished Gentleman, and it stars Eddie Murphy. And it was the first movie that I know of about campaign finance reform. It's Mr. Smith Goes to Washington in reverse. He plays a small town con man who is running scams and realizes that if he really wants to break into the big time and scam tons of money and it could be legal, that he should run for Congress.
Well, that's good. I have to look at that.
And so it's
And I have to remake it.
This is its 25th anniversary, and one thing I'm saddened by and proud of is that it holds up. Accuracy was important to me, and I made sure that every scam he pulled in the movie was accurate, true, and legal.
Wow.
And all of that remains the case in terms of what laws and rules apply governing campaigns.
Yikes.
I also adapted a farce that Michael Frayn wrote for the stage called Noises Off.
Oh, yeah.
Which is beloved of high school drama troupes around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Bogdanovich directed an amazing cast. Michael Caine, Carol Burnett, Christopher Reeve, John Ritter, among others. Mary Lou Henner, Mark Lynn Baker, Julie Haggerty,
wow.
Denham Elliott. And I also wrote a movie in a very different genre. I wrote an action adventure about a disaster on the space shuttle. And Jerry Bruckheimer produced it. And it was aired on ABC rather than theatrically. Disney had just bought ABC, and they wanted product, and there was this feature in development. And they said, oh, let's put that on television.
Make it a movie of the week.
Yes, and just to ruin the ending, to be a spoiler, put your fingers in your ears if you think you're going to find this movie. I don't know if it's on Netflix, but it ought to be.
It's somewhere.
It has a happy ending, and the space shuttle lands on the 405 in Oxnard. And let me tell you, when I wrote that, I thought, all right, you buggers, you film this one.
Yeah.
And they did it.
Yeah.
And this could be the phone call that tells us we've reached our time. Let me see. Hello? Hello?
Another hang up.
This was one
it's
of
those damn kids again.
This was one of those calls, you know.
Oh yes, it's hi. I'm from the Consumer Vacation Bureau.
And I love to talk to those people when it's not a recording. Oh. I love talking to them.
It's rare that it's not a recording.
Exactly. Huh? They try to con you into thinking it's not a recording, and then you find yourself feeling pretty stupid.
It's one of the many things that aren't as good as they used to be because of computers.
But I do think we have reached our time, haven't we? And Marty Kaplan.
What great fun.
Who hasn't heard Martin for the longest time on this podcast. Marty Kaplan, thank you so much for being here. Paul, great to be together again.
Yes,
ladies
thank you.
And gentlemen of the hearing audience.
thank you,
thank
gentlemen.
Thank you, and good night or good or day or
good night and good luck.
And good luck.
What does it mean, this life, this day and night? And you say, come here and rest your head. Everything's all right, life is good. Space and time, give me some of yours, have some of mine, and life is good.
in space and time. Give me some of yours, I'll give you some of mine.